On May 17th, the Jewish Telegraph Agency reported, and I quote, "An 1,100-year-old Hebrew Bible became the most expensive book ever sold Wednesday when it drew a price of $38.1 million at auction at Sotheby's in New York City. The manuscript is the world's oldest, nearly complete copy of the Hebrew Bible. It was handwritten in Syria or the land of Israel on 792 pages of sheepskin. It includes all 24 books of the Bible and is missing only about 8 pages. The Codex Sassoon arrived in Tel Aviv about a week before the Hamas massacre. The Anu Museum in Tel Aviv said at the time, "The Bible will be eternally ensconced at Anu in the land of Israel, the birthplace of the Jewish people, and where we achieved independence, created a culture of national and universal significance, and endowed the Bible to world civilizations." In that Bible is this week's Torah portion, Lech Lecha, Genesis 12 and following, clearly stating that God was designating Israel as the homeland for Abraham and the Jews that would come after him. In 2014, how many of you remember 2014? I gave a Rosh Hashanah High Holy Day sermon right here entitled, In the Beginning. I encourage you to read it. In it, I make a case that historical narrative is only as accurate, relevant, and true based on where one begins the story. And as much as we may understand that different people have their own narratives, the truth of our narrative cannot be denied. Long before there were other religions, we had two temples built on the Temple Mount of Jerusalem in the city of David, and each time we were conquered, taken in chains from our homeland, and our temple was burned and left in rubble. The stones don't lie. The archaeology is clear. The story begins with the land God gave to Abraham. The other nations mentioned in the text are long gone, as are their descendants. Historians tell us that since the time of Moses, there has been a Jewish presence in the land, even if sometimes we were few in number. We are still there, in Israel and on this planet, to the chagrin of too many. My colleague in Jerusalem, Professor Dahlia Marks, is a 10th generation Jerusalemite, not a colonizer, as some would have us believe. Yossi Klein Halevi is a senior fellow at the Shalom Hartman Institute. In the Times of Israel, on October 25th, he wrote, "To label Israel as one more colonialist creation is to distort the unique story of the homecoming of an uprooted people, a majority of whom were refugees from destroyed Jewish communities in the Middle East." Rabbi Angela Buchdahl, the senior rabbi of Central Synagogue in New York, in a sermon on October 13th said, "And we must not let our enemies use words to stigmatize Israelis. They are not colonialists. Jewish history and sovereignty on that land goes back millennia. Most modern Israelis are Jewish refugees from the Middle East, Europe, and Africa, and around the world who have returned to the only Jewish home we have. The Jews of Israel are nothing like the French colonials in Algeria," she continues, "or the British in India who could leave and go home to France or England. Israeli Jews can't go back to any country. Israel is their country. And as Jews, Israel is our country. The phrase from the river to the sea is the cry of annihilation and the very negation of who we are and our rightful place in this world. The false narratives plaguing our college campuses speak to ignorance, not enlightened thought. I cannot think of any other minority in America facing what our Jewish students are facing. Gary and I just visited William and Mary last week and spent time with the Jewish students. Our wonderful Amanda Herring is in charge of the Hillel at Virginia Tech, and the students are suffering, and so are the Hillel directors. Any other group on our campuses would engender the outrage of the administrations, not the despicable hiding behind distorted notions of academic freedom and free speech. We are the only indigenous people not granted the status we deserve, because the story the world prefers doesn't start in the beginning. It doesn't include the multiple times we were conquered, subjugated, and removed from our ancestral home. And it certainly doesn't include all the places from the Middle East and in Europe where we were driven from our diaspora homes as well, and left to fend for ourselves with no one caring about our survival or whether we survived at all. The simple fact is that we are the only people who have ever self-ruled the land of Israel. For the rest of entire history of the land, called by many names, was written by occupiers, conquerors who denied our rights and our sovereignty. The Persians, the Greeks, the Romans, the Arabs, the Fatimids, the Seljuk Turks, the Muslims, the Ottomans, the Crusaders, the Egyptians, the Mamluks, the British, and the list goes on, occupied the land that was not theirs. Some exiled us, and others annihilated us. As a child, I watched the movie Exodus, and the song, "This Land Is Mine, God Gave This Land to Me," was implanted in my heart at a young age. And in my congregation, I was raised to be proud of my Zionism, a Zionism I refused to surrender. In 2014, I stood right here in this place, and I said, "In the beginning, our Temple Mount, which lay in ruins, was taken by Muslim conquerors who built the Mosque of Omar, currently called the Dome of the Rock, to make a statement that Islam was to supplant Judaism on God's sacred soil. The story of our Abraham appropriated by others as theirs. It is on this spot that Mount Moriah, Abraham is believed to have sacrificed Isaac, which is why Solomon built the first temple there." I continued, "We were more than willing and still are to share our sacred story with Christians and Muslims in the world. But for most of our history, that hasn't been enough. Outnumbered and overpowered throughout history, we have had to give up our rights and claims to that which we hold sacred. In the beginning, we inherited the conscience of our prophets and received our destiny to seek and do social justice, not just on our land, but everywhere. So even in the face of all this conquest and adversity, we are still the descendants of our prophets, conceding to reality that which we cannot change in the name of peace, harmony, justice, and compromise. We will never be able to rebuild the temple on our Temple Mount. And truth be told, I don't want to. It's not the kind of Judaism I want to practice. But someday, the world must recognize that that space, that sacred place, is ours by right and God nonetheless. Today, I am well aware of the realities of life and compromises we are always asked to make that don't seem to apply to any other nation or people. We are told and taught to be a light unto the nations until our light shines too brightly. We are expected to be selflessly humanitarian in the face of the greatest inhumanity one could imagine in one's lifetime. As Rabbi Buchdahl and others on the rabbinic Facebook pages have said over and over again, the silence of our supposed partners in peaceful coexistence is deafening and heartbreaking. Where is the outrage that any decent human being should have when faced with a massacre of such magnitude? When Brandeis University can't get a student body resolution condemning the atrocities of the Hamas massacre, something is profoundly wrong with the moral compass of some of our own people as well. In June, I went to the Women's Rabbinic Network Biennial in Beverly, Massachusetts, not far from the Salem witch trials. Go bring a bunch of women rabbis. We'll go there another time. The conference began with an acknowledgement of the Native American tribes who originally lived on the land where we were gathered, just as many events and conferences do today. I have yet to hear anyone acknowledge the land that the tribes of Israel dwelled upon as they gather in Israel and its surrounding communities. Our indigenous status does not count, has never counted, and for most people is regularly denied or obliterated. The land to the east of the Jordan River was tribal land and then part of King David's Israel. There are those who read the Bible and know that, but most don't even want us confined to Israel's current borders on a land no bigger than the size of Cones, New Jersey. There he is in the back. New Jersey, New Jersey. What Lech Lecha reminds us this week is that there was a time in human history when our people lived on land God chose and endowed to us. The cruelty of one conqueror after another, uprooting us, and one new religion after another, claiming our land and claiming religious superiority, seems not to matter. How far we have come from the world of Abraham and Sarah. In the beginning, we gave monotheism to the world. We rejected the idols of the cultures around us for something radical, a God we could not see and few could hear. In the end, we have been the recipients of hatred and aggression, captivity and conquest, relocation and exile for thousands of years. Some of you stood with me on Mount Nebo. We stood there together. And we recalled the end of the Torah where it says in Deuteronomy 34:4, where God says to Moses, "This is the land of which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I will assign it to your offspring. I have let you see it with your own eyes, but you shall not cross here." And in the next line, Moses dies. For thousands of years since, whether we were in Babylonian exile or enduring pogroms or locked in ghettos in Europe, Jews prayed daily facing Jerusalem, yearning for a return to our promised land. We are always asked to capitulate and concede to those whose history began long after ours and who have had more might and power. We were told to know our place to let others determine our destiny, and to feel guilty for breathing life into the land that is the only place on earth that we could find refuge. And we are attacked for desiring secure, terrorist-free borders for our families and our children. If we are guilty of anything, it is the fact that out of fear and experience, we fail to tell our story loudly and proudly, and we are reluctant to stake our claim for fear of rebuke. Now, the other thing we're guilty of is it's really sad that we find out how much we need one another only when we're under attack. Shame on us. We are reviled for defending ourselves as any righteous nation would do. And we receive no credit for living our Jewish values, even in the face of evil. We are the only minority, the most repressed and reviled, who is not given minority status and who is not permitted to seek our truth to the world, because the narratives others paint us as privileged, not persecuted. We are an indigenous people, denied our land and our birthright and our sacred story and our right to God, all that God intended us. No one knows how the current story will end. I can assure you that the infrastructure of hatred for our existence will demand that we cease to defend ourselves before we secure our borders once and for all. Our hostages matter and must be returned before anything else is asked of us. Their lives must be the world's priority. I cry every day knowing that people are ripping their pictures off walls and blaming them for this nightmare. Sadly, this time in our history, we're finding out who our friends really are. Let me tell you about our friends. Pastor Keasley wrote to me yesterday, "Oh, Amy, I am so sorry. My love surrounds you and Temple B'nai Shalom, and my heart breaks with you. We have worked intentionally to build a different world for our children and grandchildren. At our Reformation Festival this Sunday at Abiding Presence, we have a workshop station specifically designed to teach elementary school age kiddos how to stand up against anti-Semitism and to celebrate our relationship with TBS. We cannot be passive and think that kids will just get it. Current events are demonstrating that we have to intentionally teach it." She goes on and talks about her Lutheran obligation to protect us and teach her children. She's amazing. We find out who our friends are, and it is time now to create new alliances and perhaps to break with those who have broken faith with us. Never again. Never again. Our tribal land is under attack once again, and for this moment in time, I can only utter the first part of Rabbi Hillel's quote, "If I am not for myself, who will be for me?" I can't do the rest of the quote right now. From Pittsburgh to Sderot, we bear the scars of modern hatred in its cruelest form. Wounded in mind and body and spirit, Am Yisrael Chai, the people of Israel, still live, but we have lived too long under oppressive exile and under attack. And anyone who does not denounce that hatred brings shame upon humanity. We must pray that our hostages and our soldiers come back b'shalom, shalem, whole. The story of our people and our land is written in the Codex Sassoon and continues to be written today. So, Rabbi, what should we do now? Now is the time for comforting our people and for offering strength for those who are caring for an embattled nation. Now is the time to defend ourselves from attacks at home and abroad. Now is the time to stand up for embattled college students on hostile campuses. And now is the time to thank our president for his courage and unwavering support of our people, Israel. 3 Shabbatot after October 7th, crying every day since, I thank God for our friends, and I ask God to protect our people, my friends and family, and yours. We must pray and advocate and support Israel and demand the release of the hostages. And I'll be honest with you, that is all my heart has room to do right now. Shabbat Shalom.